Welcome to the Over the Monster Precap podcast. I am not Keaton DeRocher. I am Brian Joyner. I am here with Bailey Von Schneider.
Yeah.
And I am filling in for Keaton as he is either in London or on London time. He's not able to be here. And Keaton and I, being the frenemies that we are, I will attempt to keep the editorial comments at a minimum. So we will start by recapping the first sweep of the year.
Woo!
The Red Sox sweep the Mariners over a four-game series, which is incredible that their first sweep came in a four-game series.
Yeah, I was so happy. I called it on the last one, just like hoping that we were going to get a sweep. I thought we could do it, and I was very, very happy that they did it, finally.
I think that the problem was that the degree of difficulty in the three-game series wasn't high enough.
True, true.
So they roasted the challenge. In the first game, it was George Kirby, who is a phenomenal rookie, against Rich Hill, who is not a rookie in any sense of the word. And Hill kind of got taken to the woodshed for four runs over two innings.
Mm-hmm.
However, Tanner Houck relieved him and went four innings and did not allow a run, which kept the Sox in it. John Schreiber also came in, gave them a scoreless inning. Sarumura and Strom and Brazier ended up giving up two runs over three innings with Strom, or two and two-thirds. Strom not giving up a run. I've always loved Strom.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a bunch of doubles, but the big, big, flashing story of this game,
mm-hmm.
And this is a game that we will remember for a very long time, was Trevor Story hitting three home runs. Not one home run, and not two. But what he did was, after the second one, he hit a third one. So what do you think about that, Bailey?
Oh, I was just so happy to finally see this happen for him, because I thought this was a great signing. I was very excited, especially for that swing. We are seeing how built it is for Fenway. Every one of these home runs that he has hit over the series, they were all over the monster. It looked like it was just easy power. I mean, there was an adjustment period for him coming, not even just coming from Colorado, just getting, everybody had a late spring training, but then his was even less because he was signed a little bit later. Then his wife had their first child. Then he got food poisoning at one point. So it was like everything was sort of, you know, in the baseball sense, was working against him while his personal life was going well. Like, the baseball life was a little bit of a struggle. And now it's just all coming together. It's coming together at Fenway for him. He's getting to do it in front of these fans. So I'm just so excited that it's finally happening for him. His, like, Savant page is starting to look really pretty. There's a lot of red in there. He's really starting to make these numbers look great. And, oh, man, this could end up being quite a great signing for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I love the signing when they made it, and it, mm-hmm. I thought it was the best sign that Chaim Bloom wasn't going to be a skinflint in all areas all the time. And I sort of didn't expect him to, but this was I mean, I still think it was I don't think they would have signed him if it wasn't good value-wise, but mm-hmm. I believed in Story, and when players struggle through like the first 6 weeks or however long, it's easy to get really down on them because you haven't seen mm-hmm. them perform. But the same was true with David Ortiz when he joined the Red Sox. And the same was true with David Ortiz like 10 years later,
yeah,
when he couldn't hit a home run to save his life. Then they did, and he was back. So, yeah, I mean, this is incredible to see. I never doubted the Sox were going to hit. They're too good. Like,
yes.
They're just too good not to do it. So it's nice. It's nice that they started now. This is more what we were expecting of them. And this was an amazing way to start the series, especially with Kirby on the mound, and Kirby has been great. And then they went to the second game, and Trevor Story fell apart, right?
Yeah, so what happened in game two is the pitching matchup was the reigning Cy Young Award winner Robbie Ray versus Michael Wacha, who has just been everything and more that the Red Sox could have asked for. This was his first start coming off of the IL, had a little bit of an injury. He pitched 4 2/3. He gave up 4 hits, 2 earned, 3 walks, 3 Ks. I mean, again, he's coming in and people weren't even sure if he was going to make the rotation. And now he's been one of their better pitchers. And then the bullpen looked really good. You know, Davis followed. He struck out 2 in an inning and a third. Then we had Diekman, Schreiber, Strom, all 0 earned runs to end the game. Like the things just seemed to be coming together really well. And then, of course, you know, the backtrack of you know, Trevor Story, it was just, you know, one home run, but, you know, it happened to be a grand slam. It was a pretty good one in the third. The funny aspect of it was that Johnny Gomes actually caught it up on the monster. He was going crazy. He was having a great time. So lots of great energy in Fenway. Then JBJ actually came out, hit his first home run of the season. He's been really using the monster really well. I'm wondering, like, what do you think about JBJ? I felt like he's been actually taking some pretty sweet swings in the series. Do you think that he could actually really become a value at the bottom of this lineup?
Yeah, I mean, he can do it for like 3 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
This is what I'll he does. Him. Like, yeah, it's true. When he is hitting well, he hits well. Not well for JBJ. He hits well. I do have to take character issue with characterization that you had and other people had. It's not just you, and it's not a big issue. When people say Johnny Gomes caught the ball, because what I was expecting, he didn't. It bounced off his hands, and then he scooted around on the ground. Now, there was nobody near him, but he didn't actually catch it. But it was Johnny Gomes is just an incredible Red Sox character, and that was nice.
Absolutely. I mean,
especially given how the Red Sox have been and how much they've needed these wins, which, spoiler alert, people, the Red Sox win the next 2 games over the Mariners. Mm-hmm. It feels like not only is the play coming together, that the vibes are coming together.
Yes.
So, and nothing can make the vibes come together more than JBJ going on one of his patented, absolutely white hot streaks.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's not just JBJ good. It's like, looks like the best hitter in baseball good for like 3 weeks. So I'll take those. I'll take it now when we need wins. Absolutely. But it's like, do you think that the offense is finally actually coming together? Like, do you think they're really clicking on all the cylinders? Because I think they've looked just so good over this, you know, past 6 games that I think it's really starting to come together. And this is the offense that we were promised, really.
I mean, they're very close if they're not there. The thing is, Devers is a constant. Devers is always going to be this good. So when Story goes into a hot streak, that's great. And when JBJ goes into a hot streak, that's great. There's definitely a rising tide aspect here. But the thing with the Red Sox is their hitters are good. Like, they are, except for, like, the only one who's kind of not good. Well, he's not the only one. Sorry, Bobby. JBJ can be bad.
Yes.
So when he is good, if there's someone even besides Devers that's on a heater, like Story is, then everything else is just added value. So right now things are, I mean, look, there is no two ways about this. It's plain as day. They hadn't won 3 in a row before they won 5 in a row now. Mm-hmm. This is by far the best they've played all year.
Absolutely.
And to drive that home, in the third game, their best pitcher on the year, Garrett Whitlock, got pummeled over 3 innings and was not, he was just, this was the inverse of what we've seen all year with Whitlock, where he was not good, but the offense ended up picking him up. Mm-hmm. And not just the offense, but the bullpen.
Yes.
He gave up 5 runs in 3 innings, but then Danish, Diekman, Robles, Schreiber, Barnes. 6 scoreless innings to finish out the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then our sweet beefy boy hit 2 homers, 1 in the 3rd and 1 in the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And then we dabbled some singles around to win 6-5. This is the type of win that I always find to be the most impressive and the most satisfying. For a team that, I mean, look, they had won 2 series in a row, but they hadn't swept any series.
Yes.
This particular game, especially when Whitlock went haywire, it's a time you can look at the game and be like, you know what? This isn't our year. And look, maybe it's our year. Maybe it's not our year. But it can only, you can only lose the season in the first couple months. You can't win it.
True.
And this seemed like a game where they were reinforcing the wall of not losing it. So it was awesome to see. And what did you think about this one? Especially, like, it's really sad watching Whitlock be like that. But you know what? It was one game. So yes. What were your feelings about this one?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has a bad game for sure, even Garrett Whitlock. And I'm still, you look all over Twitter, everybody was begging for him to be back in the bullpen. I'm still on the train of Garrett Whitlock, the starter. I think it is an adjustment period for him right now because you went from, you know, always being a starter in the minor leagues to having Tommy John to then, you know, getting picked by the Red Sox in the Rule 5 draft, being only utilized in the bullpen for the whole of 2021. Going into 2022, believing that you're also probably going to be in the bullpen, and then they sort of flip the script on him, and it's like, oh yeah, now you're going to be a starter. I mean, this is an adjustment period. Like, he would, you know, we'll see how they feel it out, whether or not, you know, when we get Chris Sale back, if Whitlock goes to the pen. I think overall he should be, but I think he needs a full off season in order to actually prepare himself for the starting role. So I don't really ever look badly upon a bad start from him. I think that it is what it is sometimes with starts. 10 hits in 3 innings was terrible, 5 runs. But again, we had the bullpen and our offense come and really help pick him up. And that's just a great morale booster for not just, you know, Garrett Whitlock, for like everybody in that dugout. So I don't look poorly upon really anything that Garrett Whitlock does, because he's doing everything for the team that we could possibly ask for.
Yeah, and you know what else you love to see? Like, look, Devers hit 2 homers. That's the main thing. But when the other big hits are from Dahlbeck and Vasquez, guys that don't contribute as much as we'd like, obviously, it's a rising tide situation with the roster.
Absolutely.
So then they had 1 game left to go.
They did. And in this one, we had Logan Gilbert, who has looked pretty darn good for, you know, the Seattle Mariners. They've got some really good youthful arms there against Nathan Eovaldi, who is coming off one of the worst outings I've ever seen as he towed the rubber, including giving up 5 home runs in an inning. And what he did is what, you know, people you pay your ace to do. He came out and he really dominated them over 6 2/3. You know, there was 4 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts. But like, you know, the blemish truly was just a little dinky, you know, Fenway pesky pull home run to Adam Frazier. It was like everything that he did well in this game. According to the 11 strikeouts, he got his 1,000th strikeout of his career. I mean, you can't really ask for more, especially coming off a bad outing. It was just absolutely incredible, truthfully, what we saw from him. And then, you know, Davis would come in and do 2/3 of an innings. Unfortunately, it was Hansel Robles that blew the game in the 9th, allowing a game-tying home run to Eugenio Suarez. But for the most part, Robles has pitched really well. Davis has pitched really well. And then, thankfully, the offense was able to pick up right where they left off. You know, Trevor Story hit a home run yet again in the sixth inning. Christian Arroyo actually got all of the scoring started with a solo blast in the second. And then, of course, we had to take this to extras. And, of course, the ghost runner scored off of Diekman, you know, in the 10th. But then we brought up, you know, the bottom of the 10th. You know, the Red Sox have, you know, the bases loaded. It's looking a little dicey. It looks like we're maybe going to the 11th. And then Franchy Cordero just absolutely hits a blast, no doubter, to right. It's in the stands. It's over the bullpen. And it's a walk-off grand slam. And now I want to ask you how you're feeling about Franchy, because for me, I'm loving what I'm seeing so far.
Yeah, I mean, his name is Franchy. I've always wanted to like him. I mean, like, of course. It's also like, big left-handed dude. Like, I want to see that. Mm-hmm. And, like, he's been much better. And he's putting a little bit of that Worcester Red Sox oomph into the ball.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, this is... I thought this game was incredibly important. And for me, this game is, like, shows... the degree to which, like, you and I and everybody else could get up and down about player performance, but these guys are pros. And like, this show that, like, Evaldi is like as pro is going to get. Like, that's the thing you know about him. He's going to go out there and shove it. Now, sometimes he shoves it right down the middle of the plate. But he's going to give it what he has. And this was the best application of that. And look, yeah, the bullpen blew it, but you know what? Bullpens are gonna blow games,
of course. That's
fine. I think the story to me, like, as much as I'm happy with what Franchy did, like, another story home run story made this series what it was.
And absolutely.
And if the Red Sox can go on a sustained run and get back into the playoff hunt, it will be a note that he did it. And look, given the uncertainty, I was going to say uncertainty with Xander, but I kind of feel like it's certainty with Xander that he's not going to be here. Sorry, haters. I'm sorry. I wish he would stay, but I get the sense that Story is given the money he's going to command as priority. This was a great sign for that. However,
yeah,
a sweep, the first sweep, Matt got to use the SpongeBob sweeping gift, which he has not been able to use all year.
Happy, I'm sure.
I may have spoiled the answer here, but who was your MVP of this series?
Oh, yeah, it has to be his story. I mean, I was like five home runs in the series. Like, I mean, what more could we have possibly asked from him? And you do speak to the idea of, like, him being, you know, potentially moving right over to take over for Xander Bogaerts. I'm praying and hoping that it's just a good tag team of, you know, the future of Bogaerts and Story going forward at short and second. I don't want to give up on the idea of Xander Bogaerts not finishing his career at Fenway. I know a lot of factors go into that, and Scott Boras is a huge factor in it, and somebody wanting to pay him, as much as I love Xander Bogaerts, I don't think he's a $30 million a year player, as good as he is. And somebody might pay him $30 million, so it's hard not to go play for a team that's never going to win anything as long as they're paying $30, then taking a little bit of a discount to potentially win. But again, I'm also a bitter person that, like, I would take a little bit less money to, you know, finish my entire career with such an historic franchise and be in a position to potentially win every year. But, you know, money does talk in all that. But I am hoping that, you know, we do have Xander Bogaerts for the future. But you're right, if we don't, I think this is somebody that can slide in nicely until somebody like Marcelo Meyer is ready to be the future shortstop of the Boston Red Sox.
Wow, you think Xander's going to go to the Yankees, who never win anything?
It's true. Oh, my God. Confirmed. No, I don't think. I think that would be... No. I think people would be happening. More upset than Johnny Damon.
Yeah, I did a little bit.
Yeah.
as much as I'm supposed to disagree with you here, Trevor Story is the MVP of that series. I mean, that is, he's not just the MVP of that series. Like, there's the define. So, because I live in New York, sorry, folks. when Jason Giambi and I'm of an older cast to a lot of our listeners, when Jason Giambi came to New York, he had a really difficult time adjusting. It just happens. Sure, but he had this grand slam against the Twins to win a game, and it was like from that moment on, nothing was the same. And it was like a very unfortunate for us, but like clear moment of delineation. I feel like that is exactly what happened with Story this week. This is what we, like, he's not going to do this all the time. Of course he's not going to do this all the time. But there's no more angst about, and I did not have it, but it's hard not to feel when things are going bad. Like, oh, did we get a lemon? And the answer is they did not.
They did not. They got a really, really great player.
So now we have the Bad Sox. They are, we're playing the Bad Sox. Mm-hmm. And they, the White Sox have a record that sort of belies their talent level, I think. Yes. Much as the Red Sox do. They're true. sort of in the same position here, where the White Sox have just gobs of talent. And, but they're a game above 500. They just came up very, very contentious series with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, that's something else. The good part is no worries about racial issues in Boston. So let's continue. The first game is Pivetta and Nick Pivetta, who is coming off literally his most, for everything he did last year, his most impressive start as a Red Sox.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just kicked off this 5-game winning streak, complete game, just no doubter, best start as a Red Sox.
Absolutely.
And you'd like him to have the advantage over the opposing pitcher. But the opposing pitcher is Dylan Cease, who is very good.
Yeah, he's been incredible this year.
So in this particular matchup, what do you think?
This one's really, really tough. You know, overall, I'm thinking that, like, the Red Sox can win the series 2-1. I think this one is going to be the most difficult. But then, you know, Pivetta just really goes off of how well he pitched last time. But of course, you know, this is a different beast. Like, this is a pretty, pretty potent offense, even though they have been underperforming. I can only hope that, you know, they're going to bounce back from the last time that they played the White Sox, you know, when the White Sox were here at Fenway, and now we're going to go, you know, to the South side. So I think this is going to probably be the most difficult game. So I think if the Red Sox are going to lose a game within this series, I do feel like it might be this first game, but I think it could be a close one. I think Pivetta is probably going to go out there and pitch really well, but Dylan Cease has just been pitching his butt off this year, really. So I think this is going to be the most difficult matchup in the series for sure.
Well, I mean, you say that, but like, pitchers get a lot of momentum by using their butt. So if he doesn't have a butt,
it's true. It's very true. He needs that butt. He does need that butt.
So yeah, I mean, this is a tough one, and what applies to Eovaldi applies to Pivetta as well. Is like, Eovaldi had his worst start of his career and followed up with a really good one, and Pivetta had his best start as a Red Sox. We'll see how he follows it up.
Yeah,
I mean, this could be a tough one, but this is why they play the games. And I can tell you that if this was 20 years ago, I would have been at that game, because I went to every Red Sox White Sox game on the South side when I was in college and beyond. Not that that matters for this. The next game is Rich Hill, who, now this can play into the idea of, hey, if you had one start that's bad, doesn't mean mm-hmm. he can't be good in the next one, because his last start was bad. Against Lucas Giolito, who I begrudgingly admit is like one of the cooler players in baseball, mm-hmm. and I think is, in addition to being good, very online, very good online, and like that's a mm-hmm. this is very critical to me. So what do you see with this one?
Yeah, I see, like you say, Rich Hill coming and having a pretty decent start. I think that he can probably, go obviously deeper than he just did. I would love to get a 5 out of him. Love if he could go 6 and just keep it to, 3 runs or less would be really great, because I think the Red Sox can get to Giolito. They have gotten to Giolito in the past. Also, Giolito is very, very good. A little bit of something as simple as, mechanics really made him go from in 2018 or 2019, one of the worst pitchers in baseball to, being now one of the best. And that was really just the arm slot of where he was throwing from. It just really changed his entire game. So again, it will be a tough one. I do love how, the Yankees get the schlubs of the Chicago White Sox, and the Red Sox have to immediately go right in there and face Cease and Giolito. So fun times for the Sox. It's going to be definitely difficult for them. But I think they could take game 2. I really do. I think that the offense has just been really clicking, and I think this will be a good one for them. I think that the Sox will be able to get to Giolito.
I mean, this would be great for our country and great for content. I would love the content if Giolito gets beaten. And then we have Waka. I don't remember who from Over the Monster wrote the Waka Waka. This one's for Boston, for our lineups this week. It was Stephen Thompson, I think. It was wonderful. Versus we don't know who's going to pitch. Mm-hmm. So it really comes down to, aside from the rosters, let me ask you just a broader question. Do you believe what Waka is doing is real?
I do, just because of it's been happening and he hasn't regressed. But this is, again, we will talk, this is a very strong lineup. Yes, they have been underperforming, but again, this is a lineup that has an immense amount of talent. So I think this might be one of the more difficult ones that Waka will face. So if he does pitch successfully against the Chicago White Sox, I think we can really talk about this being for real, which is crazy. Truthfully, it's at this point, it's like when he comes, when you bring Sale back into this lineup, you're gonna have a Sale, you're gonna have an Eovaldi. I don't know if they're gonna keep Whitlock in there, but then you have Hill might be that odd man out, and then if you have Waka pitching as well as he has, that's potentially your fifth starter, and you can't ask for anything more than that. And I think he's coming into the Red Sox truly without any pressure, because you're sort of coming in here with people weren't really expecting him to be as good as he is. So maybe with a little bit of pressure off and just going out there and just doing his thing and throwing well, maybe that's the key to it. I don't know. I feel like it's just been happening so much so far that I have to believe that it is real.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like everything that's happening with the Red Sox rotation this year is just one notch up from last year. We're the same philosophy. Mm-hmm. We're going to get these guys that are the guys we bring in for the year are going to be on these short contracts, and we're just going to go out there and see what they do. And Waka has been better than Martin Perez, and he's been better than the guy in the Rangers now. I can't even remember his name. Thank God.
Oh, yeah. Garrett Richards.
Yeah, I knew it was Garrett something. Yeah, it's just two Garretts. Yeah, but this is the idea is that, and then Pivetta stuck, because mm-hmm. Pivetta was just like that, but he stuck. And the idea is just keep throwing it at the wall, see what sticks.
Absolutely.
And when it sticks, keep it there. Mm-hmm. So, It would be really great. For me, with Waka, more so than it is with anybody else, I just want to squeeze as much juice as I can.
Absolutely.
I don't necessarily believe it long term, but I'm willing to suspend disbelief in a way I wasn't with either Perez or Richards. Like, frankly, I think
I agree.
You know, Waka was, it's very simple. It's not overthinking it. Waka was on the Rays. Bloom is a Rays guy. He took Waka from the Rays. Very straight lines here. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a matter of which guy shows up. So, if we just run through the White Sox batting order, see what we're dealing with.
Oof.
Yeah, it's a little tough.
It's a good one.
Yeah, we have Tim Anderson, who is a very calm guy. Nothing ever happens to him that makes headlines across and leads to 250 messages in my Dynasty League WhatsApp. Because look, we're going to solve racism in there, Bailey. We're going to do it, okay?
All in that WhatsApp chat. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. And we got Yoan Moncada. I've never heard of that guy.
Nah, he's not
scrub. Nothing to do with the Red Sox. Luis Robert, who's just he's got all the potential in the world. He's great. Jose Abreu, 2020 American League MVP. Yep. Yasmani Grandal, who just a professional hitter, just a great
on base machine,
just a machine. Gavin Sheets. Quite good. Just a good. He's just a good player. He's just a good
he
player.
Really is.
So is AJ Pollock. Good player. Good player. And then you get Lurie Garcia, also a good player. And then maybe just a little bit off of the other ones. And then batting ninth, you know, you have this guy who is Andrew Vaughn, who's one of the best college hitters of the last 10 years, who Tony La Russa will not bat where he's supposed to bat him, which for the Red Sox is great. But yes. Vaughn is a monster in the making. I think I've made my thoughts clear. What are your thoughts about this lineup?
I mean, yeah, I feel like, yeah, you really are talking about it because I do a podcast with my friend Crystal, who is a big White Sox fan, and she keeps going on and on about the potential of Andrew Vaughn and the frustration of, yeah, like, why are we batting Andrew Vaughn ninth? Like, just knowing that there's so much potential there. And the fact is that it's not even as if your lineup is that deep. It's a deep lineup, but it's something that you need to figure out how to move him up in this lineup. Again, for the Red Sox, don't do it in this series. Keep him there, hit nine. But, like, as things move forward, yeah, this is just a very, very deep lineup. I mean, in my opinion, they have the best catcher in baseball, and Yasmani Grandal, at least from a hitting standpoint, you know, he's not going to hit all of the home runs that, you know, some other catchers will, but I mean, the man's on base percentage is obscene. Like, he's going to have a high OPS. His WRC plus is always going to be really, really solid. So this is just an absolutely beast of a lineup. Like, absolutely. So I really hope that our pitchers can, you know, be up for the task, or, you know, maybe they're just not clicking everything yet. I would also love that too. But yeah, no, I mean, I don't really know that there's much more to say other than this being just like a lineup filled with incredible potential.
You know, this is Connor Wong erasure. If you say Yasmani Grandal is the best beginning catcher in the league. No,
sorry,
I hear
Connor.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great timing for this series because pretty much the Red Sox are firing on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. And the Mariners are still an upstart team.
Yes.
Their guys are not going at full speed yet. This, and even though the White Sox are a game above 500, they're in the same boat as the Red Sox. The talent is there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this will be a nice test of the pitchers to be like, you know, this is like no disrespect except for a lot of disrespect to the AL East and AL West. This is an AL East lineup. Like, this is, mm-hmm. this is, if you get it done against these guys, you're pitching. This is, mm-hmm. luck isn't going to get you past this lineup. So, so this will be great to see. All right. What is your prediction for the series?
Yeah, I put down 2-1 Red Sox, and my MVP, I think Xander Bogaerts, is going to have a really solid three games. I think they're coming off of a high. You know, they looked like they were just having a blast getting on the bus to then get on the plane. You know, they were dripped in all of their Celtic swag. They were just getting good vibes going on to that bus that I think that they're going to carry it in, and I think they're going to have a really solid series against a really great, you know, Chicago White Sox team. Like, I don't care if, like, you know, Minnesota's leading the division right now. I think it's going to all even out. The Chicago White Sox are going to win the American League Central. I think they're going to be one of the best teams in the league. And I think the Red Sox are also a pretty darn good team. And I think they're going to have a really strong series. I think they're going to win another series, and I'm excited.
I'm going to be a hater, and I'm going to say that the Sox are going to lose the first two and win the last one. Cease and Giolito just scare the shit out of me. And look.
Yeah. True. I'm going to get it.
We could be the first inning into game one. And if Cease doesn't have it, things could change.
Yeah.
But again, and this, if anyone actually follows me on Over the Monster and follows, they will not be surprised that I'm a hater. This is what I do. But I don't actually think that would say much about the Red Sox long term. It is more that I think these teams are so in the same exact position where they're both ready to sort of take off, that this particular team is one that I'm a little bit scared of at this very moment, because they are ready to start pounding. And look, if the Red Sox win two of these games, I am starting to get excited.
Absolutely.
As long as they don't get swept, I'll be fine. But if they win two or three of these games, it's really on. So that's where I'm at, and I think that is it for us. So thank you for listening.
Yeah, we have great.
Yes, it's great. It's great talking to you. We have never podcasted before, as I said to you.
First time.
As I said to you before the podcast, I am fairly certain this is the first Over the Monster podcast that is in New York and LA. Now, yeah, Boston, you can hate us. That's fine. But we are in those places, and you know that we're special because of that.
Very true.
Anyhow, we have other great pods in the Over the Monster Network. Matt and Brian, that's me, are on Over the Monster Pod, which I think we will do again. Matt and I have been trying to do it. We'll figure it out. Jake and Keaton, who are both my major frenemies, like both of those guys to a huge degree, have a red seat saved for you. Bob Osgood and someone, I love someone, will talk all things Red Sox minor leagues on the Red Sox on deck pod. You can find all of us at Over the Monster, where I do the weekly lineups. Bailey, what do you do?
Yeah, so I just try to get back more into a little bit of the writing, but I will contribute right now to, you know, our roundtables. I just got to, you know, get myself back on the schedule. You know, Worksman's is kind of crazy. But, like, I mean, you can follow me at Fraulein89. You know, I'm there tweeting about baseball, you know, whenever I'm not working. So trying to tweet as much as I can. And then, of course, you can catch me here. And I'll have fun doing this. I also have a couple other podcasts. I'm on the Pesky Report. I have Soxy Chicks with my friend Crystal O'Keefe. So you can check us out there as well.
And you can find me at Brian Joyner, Brian with a Y, Joyner with an I. And that is it, folks. Enjoy the series. Let's hope for a sweep, and we will talk to you soon.